I'm Shelley Berman, and here's what you've been missing on Pushing Limits.
When it comes to like IEPs, we're talking about personal plans that outline a student's educational needs and goals, and those shouldn't just be solely made by an algorithm.
Today, we have musicians with all types of disabilities.
We don't see any training being provided to the ICE agents about how to interact with people with disabilities. It's extremely concerning.
I'm Shelley Berman, and that's what you've been missing on Pushing Limits. Now, here's today's show. Keep on pushing.
Keep on pushing. I've got to keep on pushing. Keep on pushing. I can't stop now.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Pushing Limits, KPFA's program by and about people with disabilities. We air every Friday at 2:30 p.m. I'm Bonnie Elliott, and today we're going to speak with Jamie Zimmerman, who lives with endometriosis. She was recently diagnosed with endometriosis, and we're here to talk to her about what's next. I'll be joined by a fellow Pushing Limits Collective member, Jacob Lesner Buxton, so you'll hear him chiming in now and then. I researched endometriosis, and it was very interesting. My first question, I guess, is how did the word endometriosis come about? What is it? You know, that's really quite a word.
Well, I didn't discover it. I mean, I discovered it in my body, but I don't think I can give the best history there. But I can say it's endometrial tissue that they're pulling from. So that's what's growing in other parts of my body that aren't the uterus lining. So I think my guess is that's where the name probably came from.
Do you know how endometriosis develops?
No. And they don't know. Doctors don't know. There hasn't been a ton of research around endometriosis, which is why we don't have many solutions. Like, there's not a cure. It can be hereditary, is a thought. I don't know if anyone had it in my family, but that's a possibility. But no, there's not some specific reason that I know of that could cause it.
You also mentioned that only women get this. It only shows up in women because it lines the uterus and in all the female parts. Why? And I'm guessing that mostly medical people and scientists and all that, researchers, are men. Is that why there isn't a lot known?
Well, I mean, it can happen in non-binary people. It's anyone that was born female with female genitalia. But, and, you know, transitioning people have transitioned. I mean, the majority of science has been based around male bodies. I mean, we're even finding like that ADHD shows up differently in women than it does in men. And that's why it's gone underdiagnosed. So yeah, it's a disease that is on the inside of my body too, that no one can see. And so I think that's another part of the reason is they can't see it. And so it doesn't seem as important. Like, it takes 7 to 10 years for people usually to get diagnosed since their first symptom. So there's a lot of gaslighting along the way too. People are, you know, telling you you're stressed, you're tired, eat better. And so I think that could be the lack of research too, is we're always kind of dodging it until you get diagnosed.
You just brought up another issue, which I had not thought of, is the people that are transitioning to male or female, or talk to me about that.
Funny, okay. That's going to be hard for me to talk about because that's not my personal experience. Mm. I don't know what it's like to live in their bodies with endometriosis, but I can tell you living with endometriosis is incredibly difficult because your body is constantly in inflammation. What happens is these adhesions grow outside of the uterus, and adhesions are bands of scar tissue, and they cause inflammation in your body. And so even when you're in a resting state, like what people would think is resting, your body's still on defense mode. So you're more tired than maybe someone without the disease would be. Fatigue is different. You have higher pain sensitivity. Life is hard. Yeah. So I imagine it's hard for them too, but I can't speak on their experience.
At what age does endometriosis show up?
It's kind of hard to tell in certain ways because some research and says you can be, you know, born with endometriosis. Sometimes you don't know when you developed it because it could be laying more dormant in your body. Like I would have ever since I got a period. So ever since I got a period, I had really violent periods that would make me pass out from pain since I was about 12. And that was just, they just told me you have a bad period, kind of take birth control. Birth control made me sick, so I didn't take it. So I just got used to being in a lot of pain from like 13 until 33 years old. And then something happened at 33. I had some kind of trigger that made the disease basically kind of like explode like fireworks in my body. And it went on high alert and then it got really, really bad. So it wasn't just around my period. And I think it's important for people to know that disease isn't just about bad periods. It affects all the different systems in your body.
Wow. And I was reading something else the other day. Does a hysterectomy help?
It can and it can't. Some okay. people, they have hysterectomy and they experience less symptoms. Mm-hmm. Some people have a hysterectomy and they continue to experience symptoms. It's something I've been thinking about mm-hmm. and it's on the table for me, but it's not a guarantee. And so you are compromising your fertility if you go that route. And it's a really serious and hard thing to think about. But yes and no is the answer.
Okay. And do you know, I have a question about pregnancy, but I don't know if you know anybody that's gone through that. Would it be hard on the baby on pregnancy? You know, that must be really hard.
Well, I mean, it makes getting pregnant harder. Endometriosis. And I imagine because the inside of your body is trickier, it potentially, again, I'm not a doctor and I haven't given birth. My cousin has endometriosis. I think she'd be fine with me saying that. And she has two children. And I don't know her birthing experience, but I know she's had endo since she was a kid. She got diagnosed young. So that might answer your question about, you know, can you get diagnosed young? And she did.
Okay. She must have gotten lucky or something with her doctor. Her doctor must specialize in that or something.
Symptoms are different for different people. So she had migraines to start very young. Mm-hmm. And she told me that they figured it out from there, which is interesting because I had migraines, stomach issues, and it took me 3.5 years after my most severe symptoms to get diagnosed.
I have two questions. One, will this go away during menopause or stay with you all your life?
What about menopause? Does it go away with menopause or does it stay?
Oh, is that
with
what you asked, Jacob?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't necessarily go away with menopause. It's really terrible. I'm laughing because what else can you do? Like, I mean, I could either just be really, really sad and stay in bed all the time or try to have a sense of humor and fight life. Like I said, mine's primarily my bowel, which makes eating really hard. And I'm limited to anti-inflammatory food. And really, I've only found about 12 foods that work for me. So I've been eating 12 foods for the last 8 months, which is about 5 meals. So quality of life, like I can't go out to eat with people. Dating's really hard because how do you meet people when you can't, you know, you can't socialize over food is a love language. But I've become really good at baking certain things because of it. And I try really hard to see the silver linings, but it's really difficult a lot of the time. And I think we have to be realistic. Like, it sucks.
Yeah. And my second question is, if you, God forbid, couldn't walk, could you right now get benefits like Social Security? Is it recognized by the government as a disability?
That's a really good question, Jacob. It hasn't been, from my understanding, but we're in the process of getting it to be. Like yesterday, things are happening with getting more funding around it, but getting it actually, like my cousin sent me a message, and yesterday, I'm going to stumble all over this. Let me look it up. This US Senate just passed federal funding package 7129, sending endometriosis to the House. So it's basically right now will be, if it goes all the way through, it'll be the first time endometriosis will be recognized as a chronic systemic and inflammatory disease at the federal research level. And that's, I mean, obviously that might be a lot of the reason there hasn't been research for funding around it, but that's a big deal for us.
I asked you this earlier in a conversation, and I laughed at it a little bit at the idea, but I want to use the word vacuum it out, but that's kind of archaic. But is there little suction thingies they can help with? I know it's going to grow back, does it, but it doesn't help at all? Or do you have to go in and they have to scrape it off, or?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. They have to go in. Honestly, we're getting better at diagnosing it without having surgery, but it's one of those diseases that because you can't see it well in imaging, they basically doctors, they can suspect it, but they can't officially diagnose it until they cut you open, which is another reason people aren't diagnosed.
And what about adenomyosis? I understand that it's a sister disease.
So that is, it's very similar, but that tissue that's like the tissue that lines the uterus for endometriosis, that's going all in different directions in the body, different places. For adenomyosis, it's going inside of the uterus. And so that can cause heavier periods, discomfort, a lot of the same symptoms as endometriosis. It's actually, my doctor suspects that I have that as well. They're
Goodness.
connected. Yeah, they're often connected. You don't always have both, but sometimes you do.
In my research, I read that both green tea and mint tea help a lot. Do those kind of things help or help you or not, or?
Yeah, that's a really good question. What's recommended is an anti-inflammatory diet. And so certain types of teas would be good. Like I'm actually drinking peppermint tea right now. That's good for my anxiety too. But yes, anti-inflammatory foods are going to be beneficial, likely going to be beneficial for someone in my condition.
Can you name some of the foods you can eat? Not, I don't want your name on, but you said you can only get 5 meals out of that.
Well, yeah, I can definitely. So a typical day for me is plain Greek yogurt with honey for breakfast and let's say raspberries and blueberries on it. I make homemade granola myself, so there's not any of the icky processed things getting in there. No sugar added other than, natural sugars from honey. So yogurt and granola and fruit for breakfast. Lunch could be like lettuce tacos. But the tacos would be like sweet potatoes, I would put in the middle. And I use the yogurt as sour cream, like as something like sour cream. And I can eat like peppers. Like I can put like vegetables. The vegetables I can eat are cauliflower, peppers, and broccoli. There's a lot more vegetables, right? And lettuce, I guess. But it's tricky because I have to experiment with food in order to find out if I can eat it. And if I experiment, I will vomit and get sick if it's the wrong food. And that could compromise my work for the next day. And I think that's what's important is I can't even be trying things that could compromise my health because it compromises my financial health the next day. But again, back to the food. Dinner would be like I can eat salmon. That's the one fish I can eat. So salmon could be dinner. But if you think about eating those same foods pretty much every day, it gets old really fast. I can eat grass-fed beef sometimes. So I can occasionally make a burger. The only meat I can eat is grass-fed beef for me, my personal body. That's the only meat that it will receive at this point.
Can you eat nuts, different kinds of nuts, or is that?
Not in high quantity, but I could have like walnuts mixed into like a salad, but not high quantities. It's really challenging. Experiment, like I said, experimenting. There's the way my doctor sees it is there's an issue with my brain and my digestive system. They're not communicating with one another. And that's because of the endometriosis. It's because of that inflammation has created basically a fire all over the inside of my body. And so those systems are fighting to stay safe, but they're actually fighting each other instead.
You're listening to Pushing Limits, KPFA's program about disability. If you've just joined us, we've been talking with Jamie Zimmerman, who lives with endometriosis, and we've been talking about what it's like for her to live with it. Okay, you said you've had a couple of surgeries. Did those surgeries help for a short time?
Yeah, so the first surgery was a removal of an ovarian cyst, which was caused by my endometriosis, but I had not gotten diagnosed with endometriosis yet. The second surgery was last July. It was the last day of July, and that was specifically an excision surgery for my endometriosis, and it has helped. However, endometriosis does grow back. So, commonly people have to get multiple surgeries. I'm on surgery. I have another surgery that's scheduled for May because my doctor feels like some of it wasn't fully removed and that it might be in some other places in my body.
Okay, they're focused on your reproductive area because that's where it usually shows up. How do they know it's in another part of your body? And is it going to be the lungs? Is it going to be in near your bones? What does it do? Where does it go?
From my understanding is it can go pretty much anywhere. I don't know why it goes anywhere. I honestly, I haven't heard the doctors say that they know why. There really is a lack of research here with endometriosis. I mean, mine is primarily my bowel, and that's why I was having the digestive issues. And I was getting the headaches because your brain and your digestive system are very connected.
Oh, yeah, your brain's connected to a lot of stuff. At this point, Jacob asks how she's been doing since her diagnosis.
That's a really good question, Jacob. Well, I'm a spiritual person in general. You two know that my background is with yoga, and I'm really grateful to have that background. But during the disease, I've been so sick at times I couldn't even make it through a class. Like I'd have to walk out of class and throw up and try to come back to class. Teaching got really hard. I was in so much pain. So the yoga studio has always kind of been like my church, and it's been hard for me to connect to that piece of myself that's quiet and at peace during this disease. So I think that the spiritual aspect of my life has been fragmented in many ways, getting the diagnosis.
You said a little bit ago about your search for a diagnosis was a huge hassle. What can you tell young women that have these symptoms? Tell them how they can make their doctor understand, or where all the experts are. Can they look up something online?
Yes, because endometriosis is a disease that hasn't had a lot of attention, there are not a ton of specialists on this disease, and that makes it challenging to get diagnosed. Like my gynecologist removed an ovarian cyst and didn't see the endometriosis, and I have a ton of endometriosis on my bowel and stuff, bowel in other places, but you have to know what to look for. And so, if a gynecologist doesn't know what to look for, then it's a really tough process, is what I'm going to say. My thing is, don't give up as much as you might want to. You matter. Your voice matters. You know what you're feeling in your body. It's not normal. It's not normal to have periods that make you pass out. It's not normal to miss work because you're in so much pain from your period, if it's starting with a period. If you're having a combination of like stabbing pains in your stomach and you're starting to get migraines, and I was having vomiting as well, that might be a sign. There's a bunch of different symptoms you can have, and that's why it's so hard to get diagnosed, because if you're experiencing them all at the same time, you're not sure which one is the one that is causing the rest. And that's what took me so much time, is I thought it was my digestive system, which it is essentially a part of my digestive system, but that's not where the disease is derived from.
Right. And it you named all these different symptoms, but the doctor should look at all of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that goes into our healthcare system and talks about, how much time are they really spending with you? Are they really hearing you? Are they trying to meet a quota? How much, I think it goes into that, unfortunately, which means you have to advocate for yourself so strongly, which is really hard to do when you're as sick as you are. I'm not going to say it's easy because it's not. I mean, you two know me, so you know that I lived in California and I had to leave my entire life that I built for 7 years and move back in with my family in Delaware to get the support during this process. It's not easy.
Tell us about your move to Maine and your job and stuff.
Sure.
And how that works with your endo. Do you get time off if you need and all that?
So I spent 2 years in Delaware, getting my diagnosis, I've had two surgeries so far and experimenting with different medications. I got to a point where we felt like it was worth taking a chance on starting a life again. And I got a job opportunity in Portland, Maine. I work for a nonprofit that provides resources and empowerment for immigrants, specifically women, and families. So my work is hybrid. It's partially in person and it's remote, and it is a really good recipe for someone with my disease. I know that I cannot work full time in person. It would be impossible in my body. That is just not a choice for me anymore. It was always a little challenging mental health wise for me, but now it's not just a little challenging. It's impossible. My workplace is really loving and accepting. I was very upfront about my disease, which I shouldn't have to be, but I got fired from a job when I first got it. Well, I quit, but they were trying to fire me, and it was a complicated process, and it was really sad. But I was sick, and I couldn't tell them why I was sick, and they basically pushed me out of my position, which is illegal and not cool. But when you're so sick, it's hard to advocate for yourself. So coming back to my point is this organization, I told them about my disease early because I wanted them to know it's a part of who I am and it's part of what I deal with. I also wanted them to know that I'm smart and I'm capable and I can do this job. And so far, it's worked out really well. They let me flex my hours. Sometimes I'll take a 3 hour break in the middle of the day and then I'll finish up 8 p.m. instead of 5 p.m. And that recipe has been working for me so far.
Wow. Okay. Your body doesn't feel like going to bed at 8 o'clock every night. I mean, and getting up at whatever hour. You can stay up late.
Depends on where you are with the disease and your medications. Right now, knock on wood, I'm in a place where I can stay up till that time. I mean, there was a few months where I was always in bed by 6, and that was when I was on a medication called Zoladex, which is supposed to keep the endometriosis from growing. It changes your hormone levels, and that was really challenging. But now I'm not on that. So technically, my endometriosis is growing back right now. My new doctor is trying a different treatment. But I mean, it's really hard. It's either, because there's no cure, there's only hopeful remedies. We're basically experimenting on people all the time. I can go from being able to stay up till 8 to do this work to not being able to like that.
I have another question regarding your experience with doctors. Is it mostly women doctors that notice and diagnose endometriosis?
I
Or
can't say that. No, I know there's male doctors. I have a male doctor right now. I was diagnosed by a female doctor, but now I have a male doctor, and they have different approaches, but I think that's just being a doctor.
And how often do you have appointments? Means is it like every 6 weeks or something?
I had one 2 weeks ago, and I have one this week. So it kind of depends on how I'm doing, but since I've gotten my new doctor, I got him in January. I've seen him 3 times. My disease is really complicated and we're trying some new stuff. So, like, I have a complicated case of endometriosis. I don't want to say it can just be periods, but it can be the worst at the period time for some people, and that's not the case for me. I'm sick all of the time.
Are there any success stories with treatment that you have heard about?
Yeah, Jacob, that's a great question. There are success stories around treatment. Some people get the excision surgery and they feel better and they can eat. And my doctor thought I would be able to eat after the surgery. She was like, go to McDonald's. Like, don't actually go to McDonald's. But she was like, you're gonna be able to eat again. And I can't, I still can't. So some people do experience a lot of relief after the excision story. Excision surgery. I have experienced some relief, but not as much as some other people. Some people have a hysterectomy and they're good to go. Some people have it and they're not. So I think that's what makes it so tricky is it really depends on the body, the person, the case. I think a problem too is when it goes undiagnosed, like mine did, your other systems start to fight each other. So the issue becomes more than the endometriosis. It becomes the effect the endometriosis has had on the rest of the systems on your body. And that's what I'm dealing with along with my complicated case of endo. So sometimes, yes, and that's a wonderful, I'm so happy for those people. And I hope to be one of those people one day. But at this point, I'm not one of those people.
Now, do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, I would just like to say it's about 1 in 10 women that have endometriosis. There's a lot of us out there. I feel really good that you all wanted to talk about it because it can be incredibly isolating when you're that sick. I was really lonely, and it really impacts your mental health too. And because these women with this diagnosis are getting gaslighted so often, they start questioning themselves. Like one of the things my doctor who diagnosed me, the first thing she said to me is, you're not crazy. I know people have made you feel crazy, but you're not crazy. You have endometriosis. So I guess if I wanted to say anything to anyone, if they're experiencing these symptoms and they're feeling lost, is you're not crazy. You might have endometriosis.
Once again, this is Bonnie Elliott. I'd like to give a huge thanks to our guest, Jamie Zimmerman. I would also like to thank Jacob Lesner-Buxton for recording. Today's show was hosted and produced by Bonnie Elliott. Sound editing was done by Bonnie Elliott and Dominic Trevithan. Our engineer was Kirsten Thomas. And thank you for listening. Pushing Limits is produced by a collective of people with disabilities. Contact us by email at pushinglimits@kpfa.org. Our website is pushinglimitsradio.org, and check us out on Facebook at Pushing Limits Radio. Now stay tuned for Talk It Out Radio.
Hallelujah.